What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Well, hello there. Nick here again, and I must apologize. I'm a bit under the weather. My throat is sore, and I suspect I've come down with the case of the uncommon cold. You see, it's a higher rarity drop with the added status effect of lingering just enough to be maximally inconvenient. But hey, silver lining. Lo and behold, we finally have some fresh Five Nights at Freddy's video game news. A brand new trailer for Secrets of the Mimic dropped during Sony's State of Play, and now that the collective high-pitched keening and screaming have simmered down...
Oh my god!
Oh shit!
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Yeah. I figured I'd offer some level-headed insight, or at the very least, ramble into the void for a bit. Because I've got a lot to say about this trailer, and a lot of good things, a few worrisome ones. But overall, what did I think of the new game trailer? Well, I thought it was... good. Good. Yeah, pretty much. It was a solid trailer. Though, I'm not sure how well it'll convince anyone outside the FNAF fandom to give the game a shot. It didn't showcase many unique mechanics or concepts that would surprise anyone even vaguely familiar with Five Nights at Freddy's, but when it comes to hyping up the existing fanbase, I'd say it does a pretty solid job of getting FNAF fans on board to at least try the game out when it drops. Because let me tell you, or in reverse, don't ever tell me, that criticism doesn't work, especially in this franchise of all things. According to the Daco 2.0 interview, Daddy Cawthon is back in the driver's seat for this game, and oh boy, does it show. I've always seen Scott as one part people pleaser, one part make stuff from scratch and see what sticks. After all, the man built an empire, a franchise that started as a unique gameplay concept, evolved into a rich world, it became home to compelling characters whose stories we wanted to follow. Well, that was what it used to be. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be a Jin Doomer here, I'm just stating an important fact for this trailer discussion. No matter how much you try to artificially hype up SteelWorld's latest projects, you can't deny that both the general public and the core FNAF fandom just weren't into them. The brighter tone and whimsical nature alienated a large portion of longtime fans who preferred the franchise's darker, grittier roots. Since the location may have also pushed FNAF further into sci-fi horror, but even those who weren't thrilled with that shift could at least appreciate that it remained grounded in the same supernatural foundation that had been there from the start. Meanwhile, Security Breach, Ruin, and the entire Help Wanted series veered way too far into the realm of science fiction, and even worse, they abandoned many of the core attributes that defined Five Nights at Freddy's in the first place. Because, let's be real, any game can have the FNAF logo slapped onto it, but that doesn't automatically make it a true Five Nights at Freddy's experience. I mean, FNAF cart, and whatever the hell that FNAF Roblox experience was supposed to be, which I pray was cancelled, it just proves how out of touch some of these projects can get. And truth be told, unless these games are going for $5, I don't see many people outside of FNAF tubers picking them up just to hyper-analyze every pixel. Tell me how that worked out, Illumix. That, or you pull a FNAF 6 and make the whole thing a front for a better game. But when it comes to a true Five Nights at Freddy's experience, there are some key characteristics people expect, even if they can't always articulate them in the moment. Tension, heavy ambiance, and an uncanny atmosphere that makes it feel small and defenseless are at the top of the list. Other defining traits include deep, intricate lore and world-building, dark humor often laced with cynicism, toward massive entertainment corporations that sell childhood fantasy and fun, but only care about squeezing every last dime out of their patrons, And, of course, let's not forget the animatronic mascots that can give you the heebie-jeebies. All of this was missing in Security Breach and Ruin due to its blatant infantilization in an attempt to appeal to a broader audience. And no, that is not speculation, that is straight from Steel Wool's mouth.
People need to understand that there needs to be like a balance.
Yeah.
Like this franchise is kind of for everyone. It's not just kids. It's not just adults.
Right.
Like it's about finding that balance. And I think Help Wanted 2 does find a good balance of that. Yeah.
We want the super scary, you know, like when you see Funtime Freddy come up mm-hmm. and stand next to you, reaching out and you're trying to do the levers, people freak out.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like. I freaked out.
Right. And it's like, when we did our PAX demo, it's like, well, do you want to play Bonkabon or do you want to do Funtime Freddy? And people that came in and they were like, I want to do Funtime Freddy.
Yeah. Right?
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
It's like.
The problem with this direction is the classic adage, when you try to appease everyone, you end up appealing to no one. Because in truth, we all have our vices, just as we all have our opinions and preferences. That's one of the great things about the human experience. We're individuals. But let's be real. We all know that one guy with a story you just don't care for or an experience you couldn't be bothered to sit through. The same goes for franchises, mediums, or entire fictitious genres that just don't click with us. For example, I personally cannot get into Dungeons & Dragons podcast. I love the game, and even when it comes to something as massive as Critical Role, where I genuinely like most of the voice actors' works and portfolio, I just can't get into the format. Because all it does is make me want to play D&D with my own friends, instead of listening to a bunch of other friends play D&D. And horror, much less FNAF, is one of those things that some people just can't get into. So why, dare I ask, would you dismantle everything that worked in an attempt to win over an audience that couldn't care less about your game because of the genre and themes? The franchise still revolves around a dark past, haunted animatronics, and, you know, dead children. So you're not fooling anyone into thinking this is some family-friendly horror experience. You cannot have it both ways. If you're telling a story about murder kids, serial killers, and dramatic childhood abuse, you're not making something that most would constitute for families. As for the modern audience that might have been interested in FNAF, the ones who found the original Office gameplay maybe a bit too restrictive, any potential curiosity they could have had evaporated the moment Security Breach botched its launch. And let's be honest, even if the game had released smoothly, it still would have led to a flood of Steam refunds, because at its core, it was just a walk-in simulator with FNAF branding slapped onto it, surviving solely on iconography and the promise of something more interesting later. Insert modern MCU joke here. And then, in an attempt to course correct, Ruin came along and only managed to make things worse. Since it was still shackled to the foundation of Security Breach, the core gameplay issues couldn't be fixed. It remained a glorified walk-in simulator, now with a more streamlined path so players wouldn't get too lost. But let's be real, it just turned into a glorified guided walk-in simulator. The AI was still a disaster, and horror, still non-existent, thanks to the abysmal mechanics. Narratively, Ruin only fractured the fandom further with the introduction of the Mimic, a character I can personally say I despised upon first encountering. Why? Because his introduction was completely squandered if you hadn't read the books. No build-up in the games, no proper in-game establishment, just boom. Here's the new big bad out of nowhere. And of course, cue the pseudo-intellectual Twitter crowd feigning superiority by claiming, well, maybe the FNAF fandom should just read. Because, yeah, nothing wins people over quite like being talked down to. Ugh. I have a headache and I don't know if it's from FNAF Twitter or just the fact that I have a cold. Do I have coronavirus? Now, after reading the novellas and even recreating the Mimic stories in audiobook format, I can safely say I like the character now. The way they introduced him to the franchise just rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Then came Help Wanted 2, an objectively worse version of Help Wanted 1, which somehow managed to make the entire VR spin-off series feel pointless, Glitchtrap and Vanny were set up in the first game, only for the latter to be killed off in the sequel without doing anything in between. And Vanessa was a completely wasted character, one who could be written out of the storyline with zero impact on anything. But fast forward a year later, and we finally have a new project from Steelwool. And man, talk about a glow up. The trailer wastes no time reassuring the fandom, making its intentions crystal clear right from the start. Name dropping Edwin Murray? Check. Confirming the Tales from the Pizzaplex books as canon? Most likely check. A plot centered around an engineer tasked with retrieving the mimic while being hunted in a massive eerie factory? Huge plus. And to top it all off, it's set way before the modern games in 1979? Cool. Tonally, the trailer immediately establishes a darker, more intense atmosphere. While some environments remain brightly lit, they seem to function more as safe zones. At least it reminds me more of the mechanics of like the original Luigi's Mansion, where lit rooms provide refuge while darkness harbors danger, allowing players to have a dedicated area to explore and prep and get immersed, and forcing players to stay on edge when they enter dark environments because you never know what might be lurking in the shadows. Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The overall aesthetic takes a bold new direction, aligning more closely with, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's visual identity. The retro 70s sci-fi look seen in both the office setting and robots like the Mailbot leans heavily into the stylized futurism that Steelcation first introduced, and it worked there for a reason. It created a stark contrast with the grittier and more grounded horror of the earlier games by making these facilities feel like eerie, self-contained worlds governed by their own unnatural rules. The warehouse's design from the trailer embraces a sense of gigantism, intimidation architecture where everything feels overwhelmingly larger than you. Doorways tower above, mascot suits appear to be at least 7 feet tall, and even the mechanisms you operate under are built in a way that makes the POV feel much smaller than the character's likely is. This choice to skew the environment scale works far better than simply making the player character a child. Not to say that hasn't been effective before, FNAF 4 pulled it off flawlessly, but that game leaned heavily into a darker, more perilous horror experience, where the entire theme revolved around the defenselessness of the innocent. That kind of tension is harder to achieve when Gregory and Cassie can outrun every threat and Gregory can 360 no-scope YY fake out blind every animatronic within a 10-foot radius. The return back to an adult protagonist is a fantastic choice, and once again, it feels like Scott is directly responding to audience feedback. Gregory, I don't think, really ever clicked with the majority of the FNAF fandom, and while Cassie was a solid character, her story was hamstrung by the fact that it was both an extension of Security Breach and a DLC that not everyone played. But if there was one thing that did land well with the fandom, it was Tales from the Pizzaplex. And some of the most popular stories were the ones focusing on Fazbear Entertainment employees. Which isn't exactly surprising. The FNAF community has been craving more details about the inner workings and conspiracies surrounding Fazbear Entertainment ever since Five Nights at Freddy's 2 hinted at its mysterious history and murky origins. Beyond our own headcanons of our POV character, who, let's face it, is most likely Michael Afton, we haven't really had the chance to explore what the average Fazbear Corps employee experiences. Stories and tales from the Pizzaplex, like Bobby Dots and Clytherophobia, were a breath of fresh air because they gave us a fascinating glimpse into how Fazbear Entertainment treated its employees and how they perceived the more sinister aspects of the company, despite it being set in a different era than the Fazbear Corps we're familiar with. These stories let us emphasize more with the everyday worker who keeps the machine of happy smiles and broken dreams running, while also deepening our immersion into this fictional world, making it feel more three-dimensional. That being said, I'll admit the world building seen in the trailer here is a little wonky. I mean, we don't know everything, but we do have to laugh at the fact that Fredbear's Family Diner is being pushed back even further in the timeline from its original 1983 setting to further back than 1979, which is this game setting, but still featuring Fredbear's posters in the trailer with a clear 1983 reference to Five Nights at Freddy's 4. It's almost like Scott has never, ever retconned his series in a multitude of ways. Nope, there's only been one retcon in any shape or form. Lol. But minor details aside, you just have to laugh at. It's genuinely exciting that we're diving deeper into the lore of Fazbear Entertainment. I absolutely love that Edwin Murray is directly mentioned, and that we now have an official name for the company he operated under within Fazbear Entertainment. Murray's Costume Manor. That's just brilliant. It's also great to see Andy Field returning, who is the voice of the unit characters in the series, but given his performance and how strangely human it sounds, we might finally be getting an origin story for the voice behind the faceless, omniscient micromanager we've all come to know over the past few years. Who knows, Andy could even be playing as the CEO of Fazbear Entertainment himself. We might have a Cave Johnson situation on our hands where the man immortalized himself as the voice of the corporation long after his departure. But more on the mechanics. Secret of the Mimic looks like it's taking more of an alien isolation approach when it comes to its free roam exploration. There's still no traditional office gameplay scene, which I do hope makes a return in some form, but in terms of new direction for the series, I think we can all agree that this is a far better concept than a sprawling open mall complex. The Alien series itself, at least the original film, excelled at crafting a claustrophobic environment where you constantly felt vulnerable, surviving purely on your wits while being hunted by a single relentless threat. It really nailed the tension of free roaming and hiding while a deadly presence stalks your every move. The mechanic of the mimic being this omnipresent threat that could appear anywhere through any costume is a fascinating concept. The fact he dons costumes is lore accurate, but I also see this as a clever workaround for having just one antagonist. Now, Steel can spawn the mimic in any section without needing to justify its presence. It's like the Michael Myers teleportation trick, if it's done right and doesn't get overused. After all, we remember how teleporting robots worked out in Breach and Ruin, and let's just say that didn't land too well. But with Scott at the helm, I have faith that Steel has learned from their past mistakes. God, I hope so. If they plan on using teleportation as a backdoor behind the curtain mechanic, they'll need to make it feel natural to the player, as if the mimic simply slipped into the room unnoticed, threw on a new costume, is now wandering around hunting for the player. This will, however, require Steelwool to develop some new and competent AI, and it looks like they have more in store than just the mimic. From the trailer, we've spotted a nurse robot roaming the facility. While it could just be another costume like the mimic is using, I'm inclined to doubt that. For one, it doesn't have the mimic's trademark orange eyes we see in the trailer, and there's also the fact the character called Carnival Nurse was planned but ultimately cut from Help Wanted 2. Her voice actress kept her role during the FFPS sections, though, and was even still labeled as Carnival Nurse despite being nothing more than a random off-screen voice. We also have the Mailbot, which is looking like a prototype staff bot. Honestly, not my favorite addition. While I think the robot design is solid, I am not a fan of the implication that advanced technology like this exists in the 1970s without a supernatural explanation. Such a location worked in terms of world building because all the sci-fi tech was tied to souls and preternatural forces, which made it believable that it never spilled into the so-called real world. But I'm really hoping, and I mean really hoping, that with the Mimic likely being buried by the end of the plot by Fazbear Entertainment, a lot of Edwin's tech will be buried alongside it. Now, as for Music Man, how he fits into all of this, your guess is as good as mine. I am honestly not that thrilled about Music Man making an appearance, especially considering the factory, according to the novels, is located by a highway. I can already picture the lore and world building surrounding this. A massive mechanical spider the size of an AT-AT from Star Wars crawling across the roof of a factory after numerous drivers veered off course upon catching sight of what appeared to be a mechanical daemon from Vashtor's realm in 40K. I mean, sure, there's always the rule of cool, but that should never come at the expense of suspension of disbelief. As an avid connoisseur of all things Freddy Fazbear, it's tough to stay immersed in the world when elements like the evolution of technology, no matter how unrealistic, even by FNAF standards it is, starts to make the world feel less grounded and consistent. We've already seen the Steel Wool has some new tricks up their sleeve. We got prototype Faz Wrench, because why not? A wind-up toy to distract enemies, and it looks like we'll be dealing with more complex puzzles under pressure. Oh, that's fantastic. Once again, everything is pointing to this game being a direct response to the criticism these so-called FNAF haters threw at Steel Wool's recent projects. And hopefully, with a longer development time and a singular focus on one project, Steel Wool can finally deliver a quality FNAF game for their portfolio. I am cautiously optimistic. The trailer didn't do much to sway me away from my never buy from Steel Wool mantra, so I'll probably be securing the game from someone else. But if the game addresses my concerns and critiques for the series, you know, more modern entries, then I'll be more than happy to sing its praises come June. Anyway, that pretty much wraps up everything I wanted to say. This is just a quick update I wanted to share after the new trailer dropped, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on it. And with all that said, I have been your very sick host, Nick Black, and thank you so much for listening. Have a good night, folks, and drive home safe.